Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. I'm your host, Jim Madonna, from the University of Alaska Fairbanks Mining Extension. This is your radio show on mining in Alaska, past, present, and future. More specifically, folks, gold mining in Alaska's misty past, controversial present, and mysterious future. I'll be with you here on KFAR 660 on your radio dial each Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m., where we can discuss the entire spectrum of mining in Alaska, from the fascinating and colorful history of the major and minor gold rushes to the most recent gold prospecting and mining techniques. Also, we will have special guests to discuss different mining-related topics. Most of all, my friends, give us a call if you have a question or care to make a comment on mining in Alaska. Or perhaps you just want to chat for a few minutes or want to share one of your favorite frontier experiences. The number here is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Let's talk gold mining through the years along Alaska Gold Trails. Let's see. First, we have a little announcement for you folks. We have a plaster evaluation workshop coming up through the Mining Extension of the University of Alaska. And this particular workshop will be held on January 21st. That's Saturday. We'll be continuous all day Saturday from 9 a.m. until about 5 p.m. And of course, we'll give you a little break for lunch. It will continue on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday from 7 o'clock in the evening till 10 o'clock each evening to complete the short course workshop program. The workshop is designed to provide those interested in placer mining with a systematic approach to the prospecting, exploration, and of course evaluation of placer property. The program will be presented, as I said, on Saturday, January 21st. And if you'd like to have more information on registration, you could contact me, Jim Madonna, at 474-7702 or 456-2569. And I've got a caller here.
Hello.
I think I've got a caller here.
Hello.
Hello?
Yeah, you got me there that time.
My goodness, there's so many buttons here, sometimes I get confused.
Well, I've got a little question for you.
Sure.
I've got a little newspaper clipping in my hand dated Wednesday, December 14th, 1988. And it's a editorial opinion and comment of the Daily News Miner.
Okay.
And it says, new RS 2477 rules a consecutive step. That's the heading. Does that mean that Joe Vogler won his lawsuit against the United States of America?
Well, I don't know if that means he won his lawsuit against the United States of America, and perhaps you should ask him about that.
Well, no, I want to ask it on the air, because about the third paragraph from the bottom, it says, the issue came to a head after Fairbanks miner Joe Vogler was stopped by the National Park Service on July of 1984 as he drove some machinery across the Yukon Charlie National Preserve.
Right.
And in the court case that followed, Mr. Vogler argued that his right of access was protected under RS 2477. Now, and apparently the Congress of the United States or the BLM is something that has agreed that Mr. Vogler had a substantial claim to right, and I want to know if he won his lawsuit.
Well,
and I want to know it on the air.
All right.
I don't want to call Mr. Joe Vogler at home and ask him if he won his lawsuit.
I want
to know it on the air.
You're asking me to have the question posed on the air so that if somebody out there in the listening audience has the accurate answer, they can provide it for you. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, sir. Thank you for your call. And if somebody out there has the answer, please give us a call and let us know. Okay, we've talked about the plaster evaluation workshop once again. If you'd like to contact me about that particular workshop, you can give me a call at 474-7702 and or 456-2569. If you have an answer for the gentleman who just called, we'd appreciate hearing from you. Today's guest is Cliff Hayden, and Cliff's going to get situated here in the studio in just 1 minute. But before that, we're going to do what we do, and you know what that is. We're going to have a little contest, and today's contest is going to deal with one of our sponsors, of course. And today, we would like for somebody to tell us all about one of our sponsors, and that particular sponsor is located at the phone number of 488-6432. We want to know, what do we want to know? We want to know where they are, who they are, what they do, and when we say what they do, we want lots of explanation about what they do and a full detailed report. And what is the prize today? Well, the prize today is a 1 ounce silver ingot from Oxford Assaying and Refining, and we are going to take the third phone call that comes in. The first and the second phone call that comes in will win a piece of Alaskan plaster gold from Alaskan Prospectors located at 504 College Road. So with that in mind, we would like to tell you that our phone number here is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. So give us a call if you have the answer to our question. The prize, once again, is an Oxford ingot, 1 ounce silver ingot provided by Oxford Assaying and Refining, and you know that they're located at 208 Wendell Street. Their phone number over there is 456-3967 for all kinds of great information about precious metals. And their quote line, if you want to know the daily quotes of gold, silver, and platinum, is 452-7858. And we're going to the telephone line right now. Hello, you're on the air, and you're the first caller.
I'm the first caller.
And what? Who is that sponsor?
That's Hector's Welding. He does all kinds of everything.
Well, sir, thank you.
Anything you want.
Well, thank you very much. You have just won for yourself a piece of plaster gold from Alaskan Prospectors located at 504 College Road. You know where that's at?
Oh, yeah, I know where that's at.
Well, stop on over there and pick up your prize.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Don't you need a name or nothing?
Nope. I'll trust you on this one.
504 College Road.
You bet.
All right.
We know it's mail.
We know it's mail.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Hi. You're on the air. You're the second caller.
That's Hector's Welding.
That's Hector's Welding.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much. And by the way, collect your piece of placer gold from Alaskan Prospectors at 504 College Road.
Thanks. That's neat.
Thank you, sir. You know, I had the whole line was lit up here a few minutes ago, and now all of them are shut down. Oh, here we go. All right, you're on the air. You're the third caller.
That's Hector's Welding, the man who makes the multi-channel sluice boxes.
My friend, you're doing real well. Where are they located?
Located in North Pole, one of North Pole's oldest welding shops.
What? You ever tried auditioning for a radio show? Yeah. Tell me about some of the other things that Hector does out there.
He's a 13.5-mile-old rich. He does truck body work. He does heavy equipment repair and welding. He makes sluice boxes. He's made custom-built steelwork of every kind, I think, and he's been around here just about as long as North Pole.
Is that right? Okay. Let me get rid of that noise. Hector's Welding, like you say, has done a lot of work, and you have pointed out the one feature that he has, and that's the multi-channel sluice box, which we all recognize as one of the more efficient sluicing systems within the placer mining industry.
It's made mining profitable where it was not before.
You bet it has. Well, what is your name, sir?
My name's Art.
Art, I'll tell you what, I'm going to put Art right down here on this sheet of paper, and you're going to pop up here at Washington Plaza at the KFAR studio, and you're going to pick up this this sheet and then take it over to Oxford Assaying and Refining, and they're going to present you with a 1 ounce silver ingot.
Uh-huh.
How's that, Art?
Sounds good. We appreciate it.
Hey, Art, thank you very much for the call.
Have a good day now.
Bye now.
Bye.
Well, Art has just won himself a 1 ounce silver ingot, courtesy of KFAR Radio and Oxford Assaying and Refining. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, while you're doing your contest, I just wanted to call and thank you. Oh, I guess it was about a month ago, I did one of these little contests, and I won a Silver Eagle.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and I'm really pleased. I had no idea what it was.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
It was a surprise, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, and it's just excellent. And I'm going to give it to my granddaughter for a keepsake.
Well, how nice.
Yes.
That was very nice. And people don't realize sometimes that how beautiful some of the ingots and coins are that Oxford provides for Alaska Gold Trails. And they would do themselves a service if they'd stop over there. You know, Oxford Assaying and Refining, can I go on with this for just 1 minute? When you went to pick up your ingot, did you notice that they had a little display, glass display area over there with all kinds of coins? And
Yeah. No, I want an eagle. It's a coin.
Right.
Yeah.
When you picked it up?
Yes, I did. I got there kind of late because I get off work late. But as quickly as I could, I looked around. I wanted to spend more time there. They surprised me. They had lots of things there.
Oh, yes. Feature that I was going to point out is that window. They have a little display window there with all kinds of coins and gold nuggets and things in it, just kind of an aesthetic display of our precious metals that they offer there. And I think that that's a particularly nice eye catcher. And I want to thank you very much for your call and for participating on Alaska Gold Trails. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right, as I said a little bit earlier, our guest today is Cliff Hayden. And Cliff, welcome to Alaska Gold Trails.
Thank you.
And Cliff, tell us a little bit about, we got to ask the first question, right? How old are you, Cliff? You're pretty young.
Well, now, when did I get into the mining, or when did I get to Alaska?
No.
Or how old am I?
When did you get into the world?
Oh, well, now that's a little embarrassing, but that was June 19th, 1910. In Spokane, Washington. And I wasn't too large when I was born, 4 pounds. And to be born at 4 pounds when all of the other members of both sides of my family was 6 pounds. Feet plus. My father was 6'4 and 240 pounds. He looked like me, only I just a little tiny guy. So my mother was she didn't care to display me too much to the friends when they came up to see me, but her aunt was she did not have any children, and so she was tickled because she figured that I would be her boy and there'd be no arguments whatsoever. Well, the aunt was known for being very, very strict, and when my uncles went to visit her, well, they didn't want to stay. Oh, Aunt Ellen was a little bit rough, but with me, I could, from the moment I could remember, it was Aunt Ellen, and she kept me, she had a hotel downtown there in Spokane, and I think she had one maid hired to do nothing else but to look after me or run me down, and we had a great many miners staying in the hotel, and previous to that time, she had made herself a nice little bit of money by, when the miners had come there, they had some of them run out of funds, and they'd say, "Ellen, can you let us have a little money to grub stake?" And she said, "Yes, certainly." She'd do that, and she was never mistaken as far as their characters or anything, because everyone that now this was when she was starting to stake the miners, was at the time the Coeur d'Alene mines were starting to be discovered, and And many of those miners, they hit it rich, but they wrote her down as a partner. And then they all, afterwards, they had always come to her hotel, and they'd take me out for a walk or in a perambulator. And sometimes I get into a little trouble over it because, anyway, one time they took me down.
You were mischievous. Is that what you're trying to say? A little bit mischievous when you were a young lad?
Oh, yeah, just a little bit. I grew out of that after rapidly, but one time they had me down for a little ride in a perambulator, and there's a fellow that had what they called Jimmy Durkin's Saloon, to be honest with you. And these miners, they wandered in there, and of course they had me along, and Jimmy Durkin, he was just a little tiny guy, but he had known my aunt's hotel and my aunt, you know, through business dealings and whatnot. So he'd grab me and sit me up on the bar and say, just a small one here for the lad's kidneys. And this one time, I think they'd put me up on the bar once too often. And when I got home, why, the maid wasn't watching me too close. And my aunt always had this big silver bowl of walnuts and on a table in the parlor. And I peeked out the window, and I could see somebody coming along close to the window there. So I said, oh, boy. And I went and I got this tray. And instead of dropping one, I dumped the whole thing. Well, it was just about 10 seconds till I could hear somebody coming up the stairs, boom, boom, and screaming for Ellen. And here she come on the run, and she says, officer, what is the problem? I caught that little angel of a Lottie of yours this time myself. He dumped a whole bowl of walnuts down on my head. Now, he has to go to your sister Martha's down on the farm about 30 miles from Spokane and stay there till he gets civilized. And that parrot of his, that Barnacle Bill, his vocabulary is nothing but embarrassingly swear words, and he's got to go in the river. So I went to the farm.
Did the parrot go to the river?
Pardon?
Did the parrot go to the river?
I never seen the parrot again. He may have. Aunt Ellen, about a year later, she came down to the farm. In those days, you had to hop on the train and come down, and she came down to the farm, and she took me in the back room and had a little chat. Now she says, Buster, you're getting to be a big lot. And I was 5 years old or so. Now, you know the difference between right and wrong. And I'm not going to have the maid watch you all the time. So remember, I'll give you one more chance. And I knew that's what she meant. And I'll take you back up to the hotel. But if you make any more mistakes, back to the farm you come forever. So, I tell you, I was very careful, and of course, I think the word got out that I wasn't to go down to have Jimmy Durkin's to have anything else for my kidneys. But the miners, then they had a lot of fun as they come in there, and they started teaching me about mining. Just a little tiny kid, how they took the ore out of the, you know, and drilled the holes, and how they sunk little shafts, and how they even taught me to pan a little bit. And then as I grew older, why, they kept coming to my Aunt Ellen's, and it kept filling me in. And then my Aunt Ellen, though, she, along with all of this, she insisted that if a boy come up and started to hit me, I wasn't to run. She just set me right back there. Put your chest over and let him hit you on the chest a little bit. But don't you run. Well, she gradually had some of the fellas teach me how to box. And I didn't like it because they'd hit me pretty hard sometimes. No, you go right back in there. Now, you know what you're going to do. Don't worry about what you're going to do. Just watch that other fellow. And so This went on until I was a young man. I had to go, among other things, and keep up with my boxing, which I'd have gladly given up at any time.
Cliff, tell us, after you got to be a young man, did you go off to school?
Pardon?
Did you go away to school?
Well, she insisted, she thought it was better that I didn't go too much to school within the city of Spokane, that I should go down to the country schools around Sprague, Washington, where my grandmother was, and then get out. And as I got to be about 16 or so, well, she thought it was nice. She had heard that the school down at Walla Walla, Washington, the high school there, they had more to offer and in line of teaching. They even had geology in high school there. That I loved. But anyway, finally I graduated from high school, and then I went over around Montana School of Mines. I met Dr. Thompson, who was the head of the mines there, and they were very, very nice to me, and just nicely got started to going to school there, and I took sick with the influenza, and so Dr. Thompson said, well, you have this semester kind of, you know, in a bad way. I think you better take that over, and some of the other fellows in Butte, that's going to school there, said they had met a man from the Mojave Desert, and he was trying to promote. That got to be in the fall of 1935, and he's trying to promote a hard rock prospect he had down there and invested a lot in it, and so he could sell it, and it is about 10, 12 mile on Cockins Hill from the little town of Mojave, and so I talked with him, and I went with him down there and spent the winter, and I learned, say, practically everything to, as far as hard rock mining. We didn't have a shell or anything like that to hold a jackhammer. We had two jackhammers and air compressor and everything like that, but you'd have to hold it in your arms, and I was taught how to put in the rounds and blast it, and normal work you'd find. And we were fortunate. We had two old-time shifters from Butte and the mines around in California, and at 60 years old, they considered they were getting too old for these large mines, and we were fortunate to get them to come to work with us. So they were a very large help for me. And one thing they liked about me, they thought, well, I'd run the hoist or something like that. Oh, no, I said, I'm not going to do that. And so I'd get right down in and muck or whatever was her drill. And fortunately, around, before the 1st of April, a man came along one Sunday. We never worked on Sundays, even though we were working for ourselves there. And he was interested in mine. He was a radio announcer in Los Angeles, and he had a charming wife with him, and I was only one at the mine. I sharpened the picks and worked on the compressor and things like that a little bit on Sunday. So he says, is there any gold here? And I took where I knew there was a real rich little string, not much bigger than an average pencil of ore coming down. And I knew if I took that out, dug that, or whether I figured he'd be smart enough to know I might salt him. So I said, yeah, you do this. Dig that out, put it in the pan. We took it outside. We had a little piece of railroad iron and a hammer and beat it up. And he put the thing in the pan, and we had a little tub of water there. And holy smokes, I don't think it ever gotten a better showing of gold than that time. And he is real excited. He'd done that time or two. And he says, you know, my father is in real estate and promoting over at Bakersfield. Or my father-in-law, I should correct that. And he said, would you mind if during the week sometime that we come over and visit you? And the boss man, my partner there, I turned out to be my partner that had the deal. Why, he was there, and right away, quick before they left, they worked up a deal to buy the thing because, oh, he said, you bring people out here and they see gold like that, and that is after the price of gold came up, you know. Well, anyway, so I had then a little stake of on my own from that time on without digging into family reserves or anything, and so that made a big difference. And then I came to southeastern Alaska, but each winter I'd go out for a while, and then I went back to Butte again. And Dr. Thompson, listen, Hayden, now there's no use of you even trying to go to school. You've had a lot of experience and whatnot, and you won't stay away from Alaska. And I hadn't even got to Fairbanks yet. And so he said, there's a man by the name of Jimmy Evans that graduated from Montana Mines a little over 20 years ago, and he worked for Colonel Perry down in the African gold mines. And he's here, and he's been sent back to prospect for placer in Montana. And he's looking for a helper. Well, Jimmy Evans is one of the swellest little Scotchmen you ever ran onto. And he took me along as a helper, and we went to Townsend, and oh, even over around Jackson, and then we went up north from in northwestern Montana, and I was in with the fellas, and I normally would go and help Jimmy going from mine to mine where he had it. Three different outfits of prospecting, but I'd get down in the holes there, and of course I learned how to crib up the holes and wet ground and whatnot. But he was very patient, and he had wonderful books and stuff as far as the gold mining. That's what he was trying to teach me for placer work. And now we can get back to getting to Alaska.
Well, we've got the background down, Cliff. Let's take a listen to a couple of announcements, and we'll get back with the journey to the far north country.
Stop, this is the place, you know just who you are. This is the place.
The Owl Tree semi-annual clearance sales going on now, 20, 30, and 50% off leathers, dresses, sweaters, and career coordinates. And in the men's department, everything 20, 30, and 50% off. What a sale, and you'll love how you look tonight. The Owl Tree, don't miss it.
Owl Tree, this is the place.
It's cold out there. Now, we both know that that makes it a lot harder to sell cars and trucks, and we have a big selection on hand. But if you help us, we'll help you. Whatever it takes, a little higher trading allowance, a little bigger discount, a little bigger rebate, a little lower interest rates, a little longer terms. We have more ways of doing what's right for you than anyone else in town. So for what just could be the best deal of your life, see us right now, right here at Seekins Ford Lincoln Mercury. See you here.
I'd like to speak just for a moment about our good friends over there at Gabe's Truck and Auto. And they're located at 2058 Donald Road. And, of course, that's right next door to Metro Field. You know, Gabe's has been one of the sponsors of this program from the beginning last year. And they also want you to know that they do repairs on all kinds of autos and light trucks and motorhomes and even big rigs. And they offer the best service in town, and I can say that from experience. I have been dealing with Gabe's Truck and Auto for a number of years now, long before Alaska Gold Trails had its beginning, and they have been taking care of all my vehicles over the years, and I'm very happy with their service. They do have one service there that is particularly interesting, and that's the IM inspection. If you need an IM inspection, Gabe's has a no-pass, no pay policy. That's right. If you don't pass, you don't pay at Gabe's. And don't forget Gabe's towing service. He has three wreckers available and available 24 hours a day and can handle any size rig. Getting a tow is as easy as calling 456-6156. The number once again, it's 456-6156. And with this with these icy streets out there, you might want to write that number down and put it in your glove compartment for easy access in case of an emergency. So, folks, you can turn your rag into a ride at Gabe's Truck and Auto, located off Van Horn Road near Metro Field. And you want to keep that number, that 2058 Donald Road number, in mind, because it just might be worth a silver ingot sometime in the future. And by the way, when you give Gabe's a call at 456-6156, do me a favor and tell him you heard about their sponsoring Alaska Gold Trails from Jim Madonna. I'd certainly appreciate it. Once again, for all the listeners out there, we're here with Cliff Hayden on KFAR. Cliff has had an interesting life. He's about to tell us of his adventures as he came into Alaska. If you have a question for Cliff, the phone number here is 479-8255. That's 479-TALK. So, Cliff, tell us about your adventures as you came to Alaska.
Well, I was working in Spokane and staying with my Aunt Ellen, and finally I got, well, uneasy, and I wanted to come to Alaska. I had been interested from the time I was in the fourth grade and seen these pictures of Alaska, the Fairbanks area. Here, the summertime, there's strawberries and raisin grain and all this, and then in the wintertime, the buildings were practically all buried with snow. Now, this was hard for me to quite understand, you know, the conditions. I just figured that Alaska was just nothing but ice and snow. So I gave my boss, where I was working, a month's notice, and he about fainted. He said, hey, you've worked up a little bit with this organization, and you're luckier than most. You have a car and all this and that. Why quit? Well, I said, it's one of those things I wish to do. And so he thanked me. And anyway, I decided that sometime in March, I would head for Alaska. I was so anxious to get to Alaska. I'm not kidding you. I spent some of my hard-earned money on an airplane ticket on Old Northwest to get to Seattle. I wasn't running from anyone now, and I want you to get that straight. And so...
We got it, Cliff.
And this was a tri-motored Ford. And, oh, talk about a noisy, and we even had a stewardess on a plane, and there's maybe 15, 20 people, and her job was to run around first and give you wads of cotton to put in your ears and chewing gum. And then they also give us ice cream containers, empty ones, and she says, now don't be embarrassed if you have to use the thing, see? Well, we had a pretty rough trip getting over to Seattle, and but we made it to Seattle, and I went down right quick, and I got a
question here.
Pardon?
What about the ice cream container?
Fortunately, I felt like it a time or two, but I didn't. One or two of the men did. There was nothing but businessman or salesman or something like that on the plane, and me. And so the minute I got into Seattle, we got in at night on top of that. And the next morning, bright and early, I was down at Alaska Steam, and I got a ticket to Seward. So, about the last week in March, I got on the old Victoria. Now, that was an ancient ship belonging to Alaska Steam. Not too large, but it was a sturdy boat. And so we headed for Alaska. Well, everything was going along fine for going to Seward, but on the boat I met a family that they were going to Petersburg. And they said, look, man, you don't want to go into Fairbanks at this time of year. It's too early. Stop off, catch a can for till the next boat comes along. But when you get to Petersburg, stop off for a week. Well, I stopped off at Ketchikan and for the 3 days or so, and until the next boat came along. Then I got to Petersburg. Why, I went to the hotel and got a room for a week. And being used to getting up in the morning, I got up early the next morning, and I went down on the dock, and I seen a fellow sitting there with a steaming small paper bag, and he is taking something out of it and shelling it like peanuts. And I said, oh, man, what do you have there? Oh, he said, that's some of Earl Omer's shrimp here, Glacier Seafoods. And you can get a bag like this for 25 cents. He said, you got 25 cents? Yes. And I went over and I got a bag, and I was sitting there eating them. And here came a tall man with a kind of an engineering outfit on. And a big, say a forest ranger type hat, boots. And he came over and sat down and started to talk to me real fast like. So he says, you're new in town. And I said, well, that's quite apparent. And he said, have you ever been out on salt water? I said, nope, only on the Victoria. And then the other boat I got on coming up here. And, well, he said, you say you have a week's time. Yes. And you have friends here. Yes. Well, he said, contact them and tell them that you'll be back in a couple of days. I said, what do you mean? Well, he said, you see those two shrimp boats sitting down there? Well, one of them is going over to Thomas Bay to pick up a raft of logs. And he said, right now, we're just loaded up the swamp here, and so you can take a ride with them and go over to Thomas Bay after the logs. Well, I said, it'd be a lot of fun, all right, but I don't know anything. What can I do to pay for this? You don't have to do anything. You just kind of give them a hand as a deckhand or something. So he takes me over to the boat, and we go get on the thing. And so this man made me acquainted with two fellows, and he said, now this one skipper is skipper of the Louise, the one that's going over there, is Harry Culp. He has been with me for a long time.
Was that Doug Culp's father?
That's Doug Culp's father, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So him and the other captain from the other boat, come on, man, we'd like to have you go along. And you have a bedroll? I said, yeah, I think they called it the Stedman Hotel there in Petersburg. And,
yeah.
And so, come on. We got to leave pretty quick. You know, the tides are getting about right. And I said, well, I need anything else? A few groceries? No. You don't need anything like that. So, anyway, I went on over and I told them at the Stedman I was taking off going with the Culp and the and so forth after these logs. And I dashed back and jumped on. The way we went, along with us, the funny thing was, is a college young man in his early 20s, he come running with a pack on his back and hopped on the boat. And well, they said, this is so-and-so's son, the man that runs the logging outfit over in Thomas Bay. And so we headed out. We had a nice trip going over there, real nice. And, of course, we got in there when it was dark. And Harry Culp said, so-and-so, that is a young man, the son of this logger, said, let me get a skiff overboard, and Jackie and I'll get it over and take you around the house there. And no, this fellow said, you tell me, I was born in this country and around these logs. I don't need any boat to get over there. And he had his cork boots on by then, and he put his pack on his back, and he jumped in. Holy smokes, I couldn't believe it. I kind of thought maybe that looked like a monstrous big piece of bark off of a log, and he went straight through it. Splash. And Culp and Jackie, they didn't get excited. They got some pike poles, and first cop hooked onto this young fella, and Jackie, he reached and got his pack. And, of course, the young man, he was highly embarrassed, but that is just one of those things, a typical mistake a fella could make like that. So, anyway, we were around there for a little while. When the tide was right, we pulled out, and we went back. And it took us all day to get back over to Petersburg. But it was a fun trip. But they had an awful lot of fun with me because I had never been around salt water before. And so then when I got back to town, well, they all wanted me to hang around. They said, there's opportunities in Petersburg for you. Here I wasn't even a Norwegian, but there's opportunities. So then I went up to the office of this man that had wanted me to stop in and spend a week in Petersburg, and he happened to be the superintendent there of Pacific American Fisheries. His name was George Ringstead, and he had two beautiful daughters and a nice wife. So he said, there's a lot of opportunities here for you, and all I said, I don't know anything about this. The extent of my experience was with the cop on the Louise. He said, that's all right, I'll give you a job. And, oh, no, no, I said, I want to get on to Fairbanks. He said, listen, you're here and an opportunity to go to work. And he said, I know what's the matter. Just because you know the girls, you don't want to work for me. And before I could say anything else, he was ringing up on the phone, and he got a fellow by the name of Oscar Nicholson that had a little cannery down at Scow Bay in Wrangell Narrows, a few miles from Petersburg. And he said, Oscar, I have a real nice young man. Oh, he is spreading it on. What can he do? Oh, he can do anything. Well, he said, oh, yes, yeah, sure. He can cook. He's a good cook. And here he didn't know a thing about me. And he turned around to me and he says, hey, man, he said, can you cook anything? Oh, yes, I can cook a little bit. Well, he said, don't worry. He said, the captain has ulcers. The engineer has ulcers. And to heck with the other guys. And they had this little boat they call their flagship, the Ira the Second. Just like that, I became a cook on that. And the next thing, one of the things I could cook up and the other fellow seemed to like was donuts and coffee. And so, anyway, I spent the first summer in Petersburg doing that. I had no intention of staying at Petersburg at all. Then when
You were a cook on the fishing boat then?
Pardon?
You were a cook on the fishing boat.
Yes, I was the cook on the fishing boat.
Uh-huh.
And Oscar...
All summer,
yes, that was my job. So at the end of the season, Oscar said, Hayden, would you please come back next year? He said, I know you don't really care to cook and you can do other things, but I'll have another job. He said, I kind of want to get you off as a cook because you turned the Ira the Second into a donut and coffee shop.
Cliff, I want to take a minute out and say hello to a few people out there. Once again, we're here with Cliff Hayden. If you have a question of Cliff, we're running a little short on time here, but if you want to give us a call, the number here is 479-8255. I want to say hello to some of our listeners outside of the Fairbanks area, out of Chicken, Alaska. Robin, hello to you. Thank you for listening to the show, and I want to tell you how much I appreciate your letters. I want to say hello to, I want to say hello to Killer down at B&L Pond. And, of course, I want to say hello to Holly as well, and I'd like to give you a little bit of information about B&L Pond. I know a lot of you are familiar with their beautiful ad, and you know exactly where that ad is, and that's on the backside of the telephone book here in Fairbanks, Alaska. And I'm looking at that ad right now, and it's quite an interesting ad. It's a skin stretched across some poles, and in the center of it, it has at the top B&L Pond Shop and a beautiful picture of Mount McKinley, which was provided, of course, by Killer. And then down below that, it says that B&L Pond has dynamite deals. And then there's a little prospector running down a drainage system, a little stream channel. And he says, do you need a grub stake? And he's got a big pouch of gold in his hand. And it says that B&L Pond take consignment goods. And if we don't sell it, it doesn't, you don't pay them a commission. They loan, they buy, they sell, they trade, they deal. They've got cameras, stereos, gold, TVs, videos, jewelry, tools, guitars, guns, car stereos, and a variety of other items there at B&L Pond. So if you want to give them a call, their number is 452-3063 or 452-6491. And where are they? They're at 605 Gaffney, corner of Cushman and Gaffney. And by the way, you know that Killer will sweeten the deal if you tell them down at B&L Pond that you heard about them right here on KFAR Radio, Jim Madonna, and Alaska Gold Trails. And, Cliff, we've got a call for you here. Hi, you're on the air. Do you have a question for Cliff?
Well, I was just wondering if you could have Mr. Hayden come back another time, because it sounds like he's going to run out, and I'm interested in what he has to say.
You know, I was thinking exactly the same thing that you're thinking, and we better talk to him about having him back on the show so he can give us the rest of the story, don't you think?
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you for the call. And did you have anything else?
No.
Okay, did you hear that, Cliff?
No.
You didn't hear that the listening audience would like to have you come back on the show?
Oh, you mean somebody wants me to return?
Well, we've only hit on a little bit of the story, but I would like to very quickly, in 1 or 2 minutes here, find out, did you ever make it to Fairbanks?
I tell you, 1938, when I came back through Petersburg with a ticket, that time I wouldn't even poke my head out the porthole, because I knew if I at Petersburg those people treated me so very, very nice that I'd be stuck there forever. And I didn't know they taught me, those young Norwegians, anything they didn't want to do, they taught me how to do it.
Now, Cliff, after your experience as a cook, did you go back south? Did you go back to Seattle?
Each winter for a while, winter, I went down south. Uh-huh. And the first time I went back, because my mother at that time wasn't too well. And so I went back. But by the way, my mother is still healthy, happy, and 95 years old.
Oh, my goodness. That's remarkable. Tell us, 1938? Is that the year?
1938, middle of May, 10th of May, maybe, we hit Valdez, and then we came on in. That's kind of interesting to start there, the things that happened to us. There's a group of us fellas together, and it's kind of interesting in a way, the things that happened to us from Valdez on in.
You came by the Alaska Steamship Company?
Yes. Unfortunately, I got on that Yukon coming across the Gulf.
And that's the wiggly one? Or was that the stable one?
Pardon?
That was the shaky boat?
No, that was the Alaska Steam Yukon.
Yeah, I see. Well, look, haven't got to Fairbanks yet, Cliff, and we're going to have to hear more about that in the future. So we're going to set a date to have you back on the show to tell us about your experiences in Fairbanks, Alaska. And I want to tell you right now that we appreciate you appearing here on Alaska Gold Trails, and we hope to be seeing you here soon, very soon, in the near future. Cliff, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're coming to the end of the show. Next week's guest will be Don Nelson from North Pole. Thanks for listening to Alaska Gold Trails. You're listening to KFAR Radio 660 on your radio dial.
From ABC News, I'm Bob Walker. Dramatic moments over the Mediterranean. The Pentagon today releasing the tapes, video, and audio of the U.S. pilots yesterday as they shot down the two Libyan jets. This is not fiction. In what you are about to hear, some profanity has been deleted, but that is all. And as you will hear, the Americans attempt to evade the Libyans and then eventually decide to shoot.
Good hit on one.
Roger that. Get kill.
I've got the other one. Select Fox 2.
I got Fox 2.
coming hard stuff.
So, shoot him. I haven't got a tone.
Is that the second one?
I got the second one on the nose right now.
Hey, I'm high cover on you.
Get a fox. Get a lock him up. Lock him up.
Man,
shoot him, Fox 2. I can't. I don't have a tone. So what? Good kill, good kill.
Hey, good kill. Pilot ejected.
The pilot ejected, as you heard. ABC correspondent John Bascom was at the Pentagon when the government released those tapes, and we asked him what he saw.
You can't tell too much from that videotape. It's a lot of just blue sky and black and white until the very end, when the camera with a telephoto lens on it can pick up a MiG going quickly across the front of the path of this F-14. The lens then pulls back to a normal length, and you can see a hit by a Sidewinder missile as that Libyan MiG goes down with a lot of smoke trailing out the back. Now, we're told by the Pentagon that in one of those close-ups, if they can freeze the frame and computer enhance it, you will have the proof you need to show that there were, in fact, arms on those Libyan MiGs.
Bascom says that computer enhancement should be released to the public very shortly. We'll have more after this.
This is Dusty Lenskamp with a little holiday song about our new bonus points that I'll sing for you while you're getting your film ready to bring to Kmart for film developing. Bonus points are given you for each picture that you took. You save them up for film developing in this handy little book. Oh, yeah, and fa-la-la.
As long as you come to Kmart, don't forget the film.
Guess what's missing from these new special request soups from Campbell's? Bean with bacon.
Mmm, I give up.
Vegetable beef.
Mmm,
can't tell. And chicken with rice.
Mmm, got me.
So what's missing? A third of the salt. Campbell's special request soups have one-third less salt than our regular soups. Now in 8 varieties that make you feel mmm, good.
That's what Campbell's soups are, mmm, good.
If the special prosecutor has his way, the two key conspiracy charges against former White House aide Oliver North will be dropped. Lawrence Walsh, who is the prosecutor, has asked the court to dismiss those charges because he, Walsh, can get his hand on enough declassified documents to make the case hold up. North still faces a dozen lesser charges and is to go on trial January 31st. Senator Orrin Hatch today called on President Reagan to pardon North. Hatch, a Utah Republican, served on the Iran-Contra Committee and is a member of the Judiciary Committee. An associate professor at the medical college in Georgia says printed cigarette warnings on advertisements simply do not work, especially not with teenagers. Dr. Paul Fisher conducted a two-year-long study. It showed 44% of the teenagers didn't see the warning, 20% noticed it but didn't read it, 37% looked long enough to read a word or two. His conclusions?
The current Surgeon General's warnings are not seen, are not read, and are not remembered.
Fisher says the current warning system on cigarettes is pretty much the one you would pick if you didn't want people to read it. Clothing industry groups and unions today joined in filing a suit in an attempt to block new regulations that will allow work at home in 5 industries after a 40-year-old ban. The suit says the new regulations set to take effect Monday do not contain proper safeguards to prevent violations of minimum wage and other issues. On Wall Street, the Dow Industrials gained almost 13 points today. Finished today at a post-crash high, 2190 mark, the volume on the big board, just over 174 million shares. This is ABC News. One of the country's oldest astronomical treasures, the 110-inch telescope at California's Mount Wilson Observatory, is going to be recommissioned under a new ownership plan. The Carnegie Institution, which built the observatory in 1904, retired the Big Hooker telescope in 1985. Despite that action, the Carnegie Institution continued to operate 3 other telescopes at Mount Wilson. Now the entire observatory is going to be moved to the Mount Wilson Institution. The Hooker telescope was the world's largest telescope for 30 years. For the ABC Information Network, I'm Bob Walker.
Selling is a skill you can use to get ahead, and when times are tough, we all need that extra advantage. The American Academy of Business here in Fairbanks is offering that extra advantage. It's an intensive 7-week state-approved course in sales and marketing beginning in January. The course is taught by marketing professionals Michael Dresser and Phil Deischer. Enrollment is limited, so call today, 474-0222. Student loans are available for those who qualify, so call today. Your future is a phone call away.
Mark Air and Mark Air Express are announcing the start of new service to start off the new year. Beginning January 9th, Mark Air's Roomy Dash 7 prop jet will take you to Tanana and Galena from Fairbanks and Anchorage. And on the same day, Anaktuvik Pass, Bettles, Fort Yukon, Galena, Ruby, and Tanana will receive prop jet service from Mark Air Express. See your local newspaper for all the details, including the half-price introductory fares. Enjoy the new year with new service from Mark Air and Mark Air Express.
Hi, everybody. Johnny Holiday reporting on sports. The Indiana Pacers have a new head coach. The Kansas City Chiefs looking for one. Dick Versace is the man named to replace Jack Ramsey as the Indiana Pacers coach. Versace had been an assistant with the Detroit Pistons since 1986. He got himself a three-year contract from Indiana. Versace has come a long way from his high school coaching days in Chicago.
It's a lifelong dream for me to be a head basketball coach in the NBA. If you knew me back in Chicago when I was a high school coach and we were at a hot dog stand having a hot dog and a Coke, you might have heard me say, you know, I'm going to be an NBA coach. I'm going to be a head coach in the NBA, and I'd like to do it before I'm 50 years old. I just made it.
That he did. Dick Versace is 48. In Kansas City, the search begins immediately to find a replacement for the Chiefs head coach Frank Gans. Kansas City fired him today, following a season that saw them win just 4 games, lose 11, tie 1. The 50-year-old Gans won only 8 games in 2 seasons, and this past year, Kansas City was the only team in the league without a victory on the road. ESPN has won the bidding wars for Major League Baseball's cable television package for 1990. The network bid was a 4-year, $400 million proposal. The deal allows ESPN to carry 175 weeknight games per season. Baseball Commissioner Peter Eubaroff.
Through ESPN now, we're going to be able to present our entire season Sunday nights. You can start off your week watching Major League Baseball and pretty much the rest of the week. And we'll go to the situations. If there's some youngsters in his rookie season who's got a no-hitter going, they can go to another game and they can show you that. The baseball fan that loves the sport, and the women and men and children and all kinds of people in this country that love it, this is an exciting new venture, and it's something that we think is going to help the fan a lot.
Zay Canseco, Oral Hershiser, and Roger Clemens among the 176 players eligible to file for salary arbitration. That filing period began today, runs through the 16th of the month. Longtime assistant coach Terry Allen has been named the head football coach at Northern Iowa. Allen received a 3-year contract. He replaces Earl Bruce, now with Colorado State. And the third-ranked Florida State Seminoles will lose their junior tailback, Sammy Smith. He's going to the NFL draft. For the ABC Information Network, I'm Johnny Holiday.
Good afternoon. It's 8.5 minutes after the hour of 2 o'clock, and your Fairbanks area weather forecast this afternoon. Light snow diminishing, light winds, and a temperature 5 to 10 above. Tonight, partly cloudy, light northeast winds, and a temperature near zero. For Friday, becoming cloudy and warmer, east winds 10 miles per hour, high in the teens. Currently at our KFAR studios, overlooking Washington Plaza, we're up 1 degree from the last hour. It's now 12 above zero. And it's time now for Paul Harvey's rest of the story, brought to you every day at this time by Alascom, the one you call on.
Out of all these cost-cutting ideas, Hoffman's proposal from Alascom is the only one that makes good sense. Tell us about that 800 Alaska number again, Tom.
Well, we save $1.55 on the collect calls we'll be eliminating. Second, we increase business because customers can call us toll-free from anywhere in Alaska. And third, Alascom bills us at the lowest direct dial rate.
Customers from all over Alaska will call your business when you have an 800 Alaska number. Call Alascom today. It's the best call for business.
Hello, Americans. I'm Paul Harvey. Now, you know what the news is. In a minute, you're going to hear the rest of the story.
Hi, this is Richard Crenna. When you have a disability, you often find that people think they can judge what you can and can't do without giving you a chance to prove yourself. But Goodwill Industries can make a big difference. Goodwill trains people with disabilities, counsels them, helps them to find a job and hold it. Goodwill gives people a chance to earn their own way. If you're disabled and want job training, or if your business needs a reliable source of skilled, motivated employees, contact your nearest Goodwill Industries office.
There is no other home in the world exactly like yours. And that's why the Good Hands people have made the Allstate home replacement cost a guarantee that your home, if it's ever destroyed, will be rebuilt just as you loved it, no matter what the cost. Would you ask an Allstate agent about the Allstate home replacement cost guarantee? It's another reason you're in good hands with Allstate. The Allstate Insurance Company of Northbrook, Illinois, is a member of the Sears Financial Network. Now, the rest of the story. Every time Amos Jacobs and his wife would pass that department store, she, Rosemarie, would hesitate at a particular window. Inside, in the window display, a mannequin wore a black wool coat. It was not a terribly expensive coat, but it was elegantly designed, and it was trimmed with a martingale fur collar that plunged down the front to its hem. And Rosie dearly loved that coat. Amos could see it in her face. Each day she stopped at the display, her eyes would dance. Well, the Jacobses had been married less than a year now, and this, their first winter together, was a cold winter in Detroit. Rosie's old winter coat had been worn beyond repair. What a wonderful gift that black wool coat would make for Amos's lifetime sweetheart. He realized that such a purchase would pose a financial hardship. After all, these were depression times. The Jacobses were living in the bedroom of a downtown rooming house. For the privilege of having guests in the owner's living room, Rose cleaned house and made beds. All the more reason that she should have the warm and pretty black wool coat for which she quietly longed. So Amos made up his mind he would buy it for her. But, well, this is the rest of the story. One afternoon when Rosie was otherwise occupied, Amos went down to the department store and inquired about the coat that his bride had admired. The sales lady's expression brightened. Black with a lovely fur trim, she said. Of course she recalled the coat. She'd been charmed by it herself. As the woman lifted it from the mannequin in the window, Amos smiled. It was even more beautiful than it had appeared through the glass. How much? The woman quoted the price. Amos gasped. The figure was even more than he had imagined. No mistake, he asked. The woman shook her head. No mistake. Well, Amos and Rosie were both working, but for depression wages. The absolute most that they could afford as a time payment on anything would be $2 a month. The sales lady regarded Amos sadly. She knew the store policy. For a purchase of this amount, at least $4 a month would be required. There was a chance, however, that her supervisor would extend Mr. Jacobs' credit. At least it would do no harm to ask. So they took the dilemma to the department manager.